We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 447 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Neil Hilton, and while I wasn't able to get someone from the Spanish prosecutor's office, I was able to get patron Mike Crimmins to help me try to make some sense of all the Negreira case business, what we know, and maybe what we are staring at in the future in terms of punishments, sanctions, things like that. And if we have any time in the show at the end, we will even maybe even do a little El Clasico preview, which does tell you, because when I say a little El Clasico preview, it tells you just how magnanimous this whole thing is going on with the Negreira case. So based on the rundown, you know, I do plan on getting to that at the end, as well as the Gavi registration, but we'll just see how far we can get by talking about just how serious these charges are. Mike, unfortunately, I would love to have you on for better things, but your expertise also means that these are the kind of situations I have to call you up for.
Well, it's always good to talk to you, Dan, but yeah, I wish we were talking about a happier topic today.
Yeah, well, with your expertise, let me first lay out the overview of the case and the charges, and we'll kind of set the table for that. And then we'll start with, because of what so much is speculation right now of what's going on, the where things are known and what it could mean. You know, we're, you and I are just looking through Spanish law and trying to figure out exactly what it means. Because that's what it is. It's at the prosecutor's office and things like that. So let's lay out the, yeah, like kind of the stakes of the case. So what we know, primary facts, this story, which is broken by Sir, states that FC Barcelona allegedly made payments from 2001 to 2018 to former referee Jose Maria Enrique Negreira, with the allegations that the payments were in exchange for referee decisions in their favor. The payments stopped in 2018, which is also the same year that Negreira was no longer the VP of the referee committee, which seems to be the issue here, because it is not common, or it is not uncommon, for teams to pay for consultation from former referees. The issue was that he was the acting VP of the referee committee at the time. So, potential important detail, El Mundo reported that 2018 was also when Negreira threatened to reveal irregularities if Barcelona didn't continue making payments under the Bartomeu regime. And from 2018 to 2023, Negreira never went to authorities about any irregularities, and we'll get into that as to why he may or may not have done that. So the payments were made by Barcelona to DASNIL. I don't know how to say that, but 95, that is a company owned by Enrique Negreira through his son, Javier, who is the one accepting the payments to the company. And that's why Bartomeu had come out and said that he did not know that Enrique Negreira was in charge of this company, because he was only in correspondence with his son, Javier, for these reports that we will also get into. So the charges. The charges put forth by the prosecutor's office are for a crime of sports corruption. This was a complaint filed against Enrique Negreira, the directors of FC Barcelona, or Barcelona itself as a legal entity, which is going to be an important note here, which is both the same thing and separate. And again, we'll get into that. So these charges fall under a law that came into effect in 2010. As a reform of the penal code that made specific language that created a new crime of corruption in business. This crime is punishable with prison terms ranging from 6 months to 4 years. Any director, administrator, employee, or collaborator of a company that received, requested, or accepted an unjustified benefit or advantage, or offered or promised to obtain it as consideration to unduly favor another in the acquisition or sale of merchandise, in the contracting of services, or in commercial relations. All right. That didn't make any sense. We'll get to why, what the sense that makes. So also added to the penal code in 2015 was a paragraph that included sports corruption, which this is also in particular to this case, which became applicable to the director, administrators, employees, or collaborators of a sports entity, also including athletes and referees, any of which conducted themselves with a purpose to deliberately and fraudulently predetermine or alter the result of a test, meeting, or sports competition of special economic or sporting relevance. In other words, intent, and I'll say this very loudly here, intent is a really important part of these charges and the eventual ruling. In the complaint and filed charges, Jose Maria Bartomeu, son of Roselle, Barcelona as a legal entity, former directors Oscar Grau and Albert Soler were the accused. Of the $7.3 million that was paid to Noguera, it is being reported that $7 million of it was paid from 2014 to 2018, and that is what the charges are for, because as I said before, the law came into effect in 2010, so any payments made prior to 2010, they may be unethical, they may be immoral, but they are not what is being brought into this case because they do not fall under that law because the law came into effect in 2010. So if you see Laporta and how he is caught up in this whole thing, it is as the current president of Barcelona, as the legal entity currently being sued, along with those all the other parties that I mentioned, including Negreira himself, along with Bartomeu, Roselle, Grau, and Soler. So, all right, that was a lot, Mike. That was a lot. I think I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to hand it over to you for a little while here because there was a bit to try to get through. But I think that's in the legalese of it. That's what that being Barcelona is facing. Again, intent is a really important part of this. But the push and pull of what the point of this report was, when these reports, the nature of these reports, where the reports, all these different things, including, we'll start here, is that for anyone who believes that Barcelona is completely innocent of everything at all, the fact that the prosecutor's office would bring forth charges without evidence, as you will mention and be speaking about, is highly unlikely, which means that there is not just smoke and fire, there is a full blaze here. But to what extreme, to what level is Barcelona culpable, and to what nefarious criminal charges are true and valid in this case?
Yeah, wow. There's so many angles to this, so it's hard to know where to start. But let me first let our listeners know, who I am. I was a U.S. lawyer for 15 years, and then for 12 years after that, I owned and ran an international corporate private investigation firm that operated throughout Latin America, where I obviously witnessed plenty of corrupt practices. And in fact, a large part of what my company did and what I did was investigate corruption under the U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act and the U.K. Bribery Act. So I'm not a Spanish lawyer. I'm not an expert in Spanish law or corrupt practices in Spain specifically, but I have a lot of experience in these issues generally, and especially in Latin America. So that's where I'm coming from. There's also a couple important things I think that we should talk about just to get out of the way, because the online discourse about this seems to relate a lot to Tebas and sort of his attitude mm-hmm. toward Barca. And even Laporta says that, you know, Tebas and others who are anti-Barcelonistas are just trying to, you know, sully the club through this. But, you know, I think Tebas is anti-Barca. It seems pretty obvious that he's anti-Barca. And there's obviously media in Spain who are anti-Barca. But that doesn't mean Barca's innocent. Just because there are people out there out mm-hmm. to get Barca and hate Barca and say bad things about Barca doesn't mean that the club didn't do bad things. It can both be true that, you know, people hate Barcelona and Barcelona is not completely innocent here, right? And then the second thing is, I'm so tired of people on the internet saying, oh, well, look at this call that went against us in 2016. We couldn't possibly be corrupt because otherwise this call would have gone in our favor. Or anti-Barca people on the internet saying, oh, look at this call you got, you know, or you didn't get a penalty for, 70 games. Therefore, you're obviously guilty. Neither one of those positions makes much sense. It's going to come down to what was done, what was paid, what the agreement was, and what the intent of that agreement was, and if it was a corrupt agreement, and whether that corrupt agreement fits within the definition that's in the code. It's in the statute. I mean, and for right or wrong, you know, Barca could have done terrible things, you know, really corrupt things. But if it doesn't actually fit within the language of the statute, then they likely won't get convicted of the crime.
Let me elevate what you just said again. That's again the point, that you can talk about red cards and penalties and not penalties and whatever, and you can go back and look through the film. But those instances are not going to be important because, again, the primary word here is intent. even if nothing happened, even if Barca never got a single referee or anything like that in their favor, if they had the intent to get some kind of favor, that is going to be the issue.
That's right. And if you pay a judge, wink, wink, and you give him a sack full of money and he still rules against you, like you still committed a crime, right?
But only, and actually, only the crime if you're wearing a monocle and a top hat. I think you're fine if you do it that way.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because we were just talking before the recording about Colin Millar's tweet this morning saying that Negreira's son, there's a leaked message that Negreira's son leaked the identity of the referee for the Copa del Rey final against Alaves while not providing that information to Alaves. Like if that's true, that's corrupt, right? That's not, mm-hmm. that's not good. But at the same time, like my first reaction to that was, oh Jesus, but does that fit within the definition of the sports corruption in the statute? Because the statute specifically talks about an effort to influence the outcome. Does just knowing, is telling one of the participants who the ref will be, does that influence the outcome? I don't know. Maybe I could probably argue, if I was a lawyer for the prosecutor, I could probably argue that it does fit within the statute. But if I'm a lawyer for Barcelona, I could come up with a pretty good argument that it's not. So it's going to come down to these nuances about the technical language that of what exactly was done and what exactly does the statute prohibit.
Yeah, and not skipping ahead too far with the punishments, because again, that'll be the what we get to in a minute. But when you the example you just brought up, that Colin Millar said, like, yes, you're right. Like, that is something for the prosecutor to use in the case. So when you hear something like that, I think, okay, then they're building evidence. They're building this case against FC Barcelona and the former presidents and Negreira and his son. And that kind of thing might institute some kind of fine or punishment. But it's like, again, not jumping ahead to the punishment stuff, but does that thing, like knowing who the referee is when your opponent doesn't 2 months beforehand, does that equal the dissolving of your club? So like the punishment, we'll say the punishment in theory should fit the crime. So when we go to talk about punishment, I just want to say, as you're giving examples here, you know, to what level will the judge say that is punishable by X based on the thing that you did, right? So as damning as that information might be to the case, is that information, even if true, damning enough not only to prove their case, yet you're correct, one, but two, is that a good enough evidence to bring the hammer down, if you will, on Barcelona? And again, we'll get into that, but
yeah, we'll see. We're a long way from that, hopefully. Yeah. But
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So anyway, I think it might be instructive just to like lay out as the most positive case I can. Okay, so this isn't necessarily what I believe, but if I'm the spin doctor hired by Barcelona, you know, this is, you know, maybe I would say something along the lines of like, hey, look, Barcelona hired a consultant to provide reports on tendencies of referees and like what they can get away with certain referees and how they'll referee a game, which itself is not improper and in fact is common at the top level of any sport. And sure, Barcelona paid $7 million to this company, which seems like an absurd amount until you think about what Barcelona paid for Coutinho or what they've paid to Brazilian agents for Douglas and others, right? For the better part of a decade, Barcelona grossly overpaid for everything. So the fact that they quote unquote paid an exorbitant amount to this particular company or consultant is meaningless. It's just another reflection of how poorly Barca was managed.
Are they corrupt? Are they stupid? Or are they both?
Exactly. Well, yeah. I mean, they certainly are stupid, right? In a lot of the dealings they've had. And, you know, there's been some speculation. And I think, you know, if I was arguing, I would say, hey, they didn't even know Negreira was involved with the company. It was his son that they dealt with. And other teams like Girona engaged him too. That's a well-known public case because they got into a dispute over money as well. And if Negreira was involved when he was the VP of referees committee, that just presents an appearance of a conflict of interest. It doesn't mean that he actually used his influence for anything in particular. Besides, if Barca were going to pay referees to help win games, why go to this largely powerless executive and not the refs on the field, as PK just pointed out in an interview this week? Okay, that's the best I can do.
Yeah, I mean, to the point on the referee too, it was his name is escaping at the moment, but one of the former referees in the league also came out and said, don't bring the referees into this. Like, no referee was ever a part of this. Like, we're not going to go down for this. Like, we're not a part of this. Like, leave us alone in this case. Which, if anything, that does help Barcelona's case, you know, to put that spin on it, that like, can Barcelona prove that, as we said, Enric Negreira was largely some kind of unnecessary figurehead that thought he was more important and powerful than he was.
Right. And hopefully that's the case. I mean, hopefully that is the case. And we'll get into it, but like, it's hard to have a big conspiracy, right? It's hard to have a lot of people involved in a criminal activity without getting caught. So the idea that like there were a lot of referees involved is pretty hard to get my mind around. Now, if there was one or two referees involved, maybe, right? Maybe. So anyway, like I said, that's the best case I can sort of put forward for Barca, the most innocent case. But unfortunately, it's not totally convincing for a few reasons. First of all, where are the reports that Barca apparently or Barca claimed to have paid for? It doesn't really make sense that you would pay millions of dollars for oral reports for phone calls from a consultant. That just doesn't line up. Although Negreira's son apparently said that he provided actual written reports to the prosecutors. But there's a lot of conflicting information about this because Valverde and a source close to Pep reportedly said they never saw any reports about referees. So even the existence of these reports are questionable. Second, Negreira himself in the case said to tax authorities, this is reported in the Spanish media, that Barcelona had paid him to make sure no refereeing decisions were made against them, which is to say for everything to be neutral. So in addition to being inconsistent with Barca's explanation, it pretty much is an admission of corruption. Imagine a judge saying in a legal case saying, oh, sure, one of the parties gave me a sack full of money, but they did it just to make sure that I was impartial in the case. Wink, wink. You know, it feels like a protection racket, like mobsters saying, you know, hey, shop owners, give me your money and I won't break your windows, basically. Right. Like, we're just going to demand. We're going to demand money for neutrality. We're going to demand money to just do what we're otherwise obligated to do. That's a pretty bad statement by Negreira. And it's also completely inconsistent with what Barcelona's explanation is, which is that it was about refereeing, you know, technical reports on referees. So that's a pretty bad fact. And then, of course, as you mentioned earlier, Bartomeu said Negreira tried to blackmail him when he ended the arrangement, threatening to go public with their arrangement. And you don't threaten to expose a perfectly legitimate agreement. If you're threatening to expose this arrangement that they had, then you yourself must believe that it would be at least embarrassing, if not, you know, seriously legally problematic for Barcelona. And of course, he didn't follow through. He didn't make it public when Bartomeu stopped the payments. Why? Well, the most logical explanation to me is because he himself was implicated, at least because he didn't report payments for tax purposes, but maybe also because he knew he was implicated in a more nefarious payment for favorable treatment scandal. So that's a bad fact. And then fourth, and probably the most damning one, as you mentioned earlier, is the prosecutors charged him. And prosecutors don't tend to bring charges without pretty solid evidence, because it's a pretty embarrassing thing for a prosecutor to bring a case that falls apart for lack of evidence. So it feels like they must have something pretty pretty damning or pretty solid, and that the, you know, to support the very specific charge they made, which was that there was an exchange for money to carry out actions tending to favor Barcelona in the decision-making of referees in the matches played by the club. That's the language. Obviously that's a translation, but that's the language of the complaint or the charging documents, which is, that's, you know, in influence tending to favor Barcelona in the decision-making of referees in the matches played by the club. That sounds pretty bad. So, you know, on the other hand, though, I should point out Marca had a report last week that the prosecutors do not have any evidence of actual payment for favorable treatment on the field. So trying to read those two things and make them consistent, it does. And also with Colin Millar's tweet this morning, it does feel like maybe there was some influence in the assignment of referees to matches, or like this report this morning, Barcelona being tipped off to who the referee would be, which I can see giving them a slight advantage in preparing for a match. And obviously if there was influence on the assignment of the referee to who would referee a particular match, you know, maybe someone that is not as perceived as anti-Barca as some other refs, or someone that referees a game that's helpful or consistent with Barcelona style, like calls a lot of fouls or something when other teams are trying to disrupt, you know, Barca's more free flowing style. So, and that would not implicate the referees themselves, right? If they may not have known even if there was some corrupt arrangement to influence who would referee a game, the actual referees on the field might have, you likely would have no knowledge of that, which also makes some sense to me because, again, I feel like it's difficult to imagine even several referees involved in, you know, in just outright bribery for calls. And also, you know, you and I, we've watched all these matches over the years, and yeah, we get some favorable calls here, we get some bad calls there. Some matches seem to be refereed more, you know, we get a little lucky in some matches, we're just as unlucky in others. Like, it doesn't strike me that watching matches, like, wow, Barcelona sure gets a lot of calls. Like, I know other fans of other clubs in the league will be like, are you kidding me? You guys get all the calls. But I really, trying to be as objective as possible, it really doesn't feel that way. We've had calls that cost us the league, for God's sake, right? In 2017, I think it was, right? I mean, and that's right in the heart of when this happened. And again, I don't want to be like, specific calls don't exonerate. I don't want to, you know, run afoul of my own admonition there, but it just doesn't feel like we systematically have gotten, you know, more than our fair share of calls over the years. But, you know, maybe that's just my own bias. But then, and then finally, I just want to say the other reason I find the innocent explanation hard to believe is there just isn't any feasible, proper, non-corrupt explanation for why you're paying an executive of the refereeing committee all this money. It's just wrong, right? Like, and especially when both sides hid this. Like, I go over the financial statements every year, as you know, in the annual report, and I read all the notes and I read everything, and there's never anything in there about consultants, to, you know, referee consultants. Like, where's, if this is totally on the up and up, then why is it being hidden? Why is it going through a shell company? Why is there no transparency about it? You know, in the law, there's a, not to throw out too much Latin, but there's a Latin phrase, res ipsa loquitur. It means the thing speaks for itself. And it's kind of like, you know, they paid money to a guy who's currently on the, you know, a VP of the referee committee, paid him $7 million. And it's like, that's it. It speaks for itself. It's wrong. You can't, there's no proper explanation for it. So we're talking about gradations of badness here, right? Like, what really happened and how bad is it? Because even the most innocent explanation is at least not consistent with ethical business practices, is what I'll say, right? So that's kind of where I'm at the moment. If I want to spin the other way, the most plausible, terrible outcome, I think, for Barca, and again, I find this hard to believe a little bit, but it does have some, it does explain a few things, is if, and again, I'm just speculating here, I just want to make that clear, right? Like, what if Negreira was a middleman, and Barca used him to approach referees about specific games? Again, this is speculative, but to me, it has an air of plausibility for a few reasons. first, again, there's no way that all or even a significant number of refs in Spain are corrupt. That's the kind of far-flung conspiracy that people imagine happens, but is virtually impossible to pull off in the real world because, you know, of its breadth and complexity and how many people are involved and how many people would know about it. But a few, like one or two or three refs could be corrupt, right? But it would be too risky for Barca or someone at Barca to approach individual refs directly with like a wink-wink suggestion of taking a bribe to influence the match. They don't, and it wouldn't know if that ref was going to turn around and report them immediately to the authorities, right? And this happens all the time in corrupt bribery schemes. You need a middleman. You need an intermediary, someone who knows the people involved and who can make this suggestion to the people that he, because he knows all the refs, who he thought might be receptive to the idea. And he can suggest it in a casual, nuanced way with plausible deniability without even mentioning the club that's involved or even if there is a club involved. And if he gets rebuffed, then they walk away and there's not really anything that the referee can report. And in that way, everybody maintains plausible deniability and there's sort of nothing, even if the referee goes and reports, it's like, well, there must be some misunderstanding because I never actually said anything specific about doing this. And that's why, I mean, intermediaries are used in bribery schemes all the time. I mean, you can see it's very obvious why you would want to do that. And this type of arrangement, the other reason I find it somewhat plausible is it would explain the amount of money involved a little bit better than Negreira just pocketed the entire 7 million for what? Tipping us off to who the refs were in a few games or helping with the assignment of refs. That seems a little bit absurd. But if some of the money was for him as an intermediary and some of it was for paying individual referees, then the amount of money involved starts to make a little more sense. So again, that's all speculative. That's like a worst case scenario that I can imagine in my mind. I'm not saying that that has happened or that's what, you know, what's going on here. But to me, those are sort of the barbell way to look at it with. I gave my very positive spin the best I could. And this is kind of the most negative result that I can think of. And hopefully it's farther down the spectrum towards the, you know, more innocent, quote unquote, merely unethical conflict of interest rather than patently illegal.
Yeah. And when you say, you know, again, really important words here, speculation, worst case scenario, I think that's a perfect transition to kind of finish this last chapter of this. And that is with the speculative punishment that would come down for FC Barcelona. So again, a reminder that the degree of punishment will depend on how many actions and how, we'll say, elaborate this plan of corruption was. So the severity of the actions will dictate the punishment. If Barcelona did benefit, either directly or indirectly, the penalty for the club is convicted, if convicted, is a fine. That is what is in the law, that it's a fine if convicted. However, depending on the severity of the actions, judicial intervention, suspension of activities, or the dissolution of the club could all take place. That's also in the law. So that last part is, of course, what will make the headlines, because the dissolution of FC Barcelona is going to get you on the bottom ticker. But it is only the most severe representation of the punishment if Barcelona, the club, is convicted. Remember, not all individuals, even in this case, might be convicted. So if there's a way to prove innocence for FC Barcelona, which will be difficult if you're charging former presidents and directors of FC Barcelona, seems difficult that the club as a legal entity would skate by while individuals went down. But, you know, as I do say that too, as for culés and the general public continuing to view this case, not only will it take some time for this all to go down, but the club's public image will obviously take a hit as this is all happening. So when we say how long this is going to take, because let's say the club is proven of its innocence, I can assume that there will be defamation cases over and over again and things like that coming out afterwards. Like with a best case scenario for Barcelona, they're going to be in court for 10 years, 15 years, going through all the different, you know, whether they're guilty or of what, how guilty they are, and different parts of the legal process goes along. So also there is what I want to mention too, a lot of noise to be ignored. Like it was very difficult. That's why I took a week and a half to get through this. Or, I mean, I guess it was only 5-6 days ago, but it feels like it's been a lifetime. But I took a few days to get through this just because it took so long to figure out what was just noise, what was actual in the legal jargon, and I wanted to get through all that. So I also want to mention, too, Rosell and Bartomeu are key figures in this, and they are a part of the noise that should not be ignored. They are part of this case and are part of this case as presidents of FC Barcelona. So while seeing them rot in jail may feel really cathartic for a lot of people, it won't be the best outcome for the club. They cannot take the fall for this case, because if they are given multiple years of jail time, that likely means that FC Barcelona has also received not only a hefty fine, but likely some other administrative punishment. That is what I'll say. If Rizal and Bartomeu get full jail time and they are charged with criminal corruption to the highest letter of the law that they can under the sports corruption law, then again, FC Barcelona as a legal entity is probably likely in a lot of trouble. The other figures and noise you're going to hear, Tebas, as we mentioned, how does he play in all this? Well, Liga has already come out and said that they cannot investigate because the case relates to events that took place more than 3 years ago. So the Liga will not come down with any sporting punishment. But UEFA and FIFA can, on their behalf, after the final ruling, take action. So that could be, let's say if the ruling is highly unfavorable to Barca, you could see potential European bans. You could see the stripping of the 2015 Champions League title. Those are all legal possibilities. And again, that would come down to what I would consider worst case severities of the ruling. So where else was Tebas and the Liga fit in this? Like, if he does at all? Well, of course, it's the court of public opinion as much as it is actual legal court. So Tebas, of course, does benefit by creating division between the two teams in Barcelona and Real Madrid that both rejected the CVC deal and are attempting to create the Super League. So if Tebas and other media and other figures around Madrid put pressure on Real Madrid to oppose Barcelona, that would benefit Tebas more than Florentino Perez and his goal of the Super League. So regardless of where the pressure came from, though, of course, the Real Madrid letter or statement made big news because they are now joining the lawsuit as damaged parties. But not saying I'm not concerned about that, and I find that to be news, Mike, but what impact they have on proving intent of criminal corruption for FC Barcelona, it remains to be seen. Like, that seems to me like a far-fetched notion that there anyone from Real Madrid would testify and be a witness whose testimony is going to be useful to this case, but you never
know. I take their statement to be, I mean, it's sort of like it was somewhat tepid, actually. They weren't just piling on, and you know, they didn't sign the original letter from the other first and second division team sort of condemning Barcelona over this. My first suspicion was they had a similar arrangement of some kind with someone, but again, that's speculative. But I think what they're saying more is, if this happened, if Barcelona did this, then we are an aggrieved party. We're a victim, essentially.
Yeah.
And we want to have our say in court when victims get a chance to speak about what the punishment should be. But I don't think unless there's somebody within Real Madrid who actually has actual knowledge of interactions with Negreira or something, I don't see them being a witness in the liability part of the case, you know. But, you know, as to punishment, we should say, you know, in Spain, like the U.S., that there's a presumption of innocence in the criminal court. So even though all this looks pretty bad, it's all going to come down to proof, right? The presumption, you know, overcoming the presumption of innocence requires proof. And it's in the U.S., the standard is in a criminal case is beyond all reasonable doubt, right? So, yeah, I don't know what exactly the wording is of the standard in Spain, but I know it's similar to that. So it has to be a pretty high level of proof to convict someone criminally. And that goes for the club as well. As for punishments for the club, let's say, you know, sort of a worst case scenario, and the club is found to have, you know, Rosé and Bartomeu and maybe Grau and Soler too, or whoever, you know, it is convicted and it's determined in court beyond the level of proof required that they violated the corruption statute criminally. The most likely outcome, like you said, for Barcelona is a fine. Now, that could be a very significant fine, right? That hampers Barcelona's even further in a sporting sense. You know, as we know, the financial problems over the last few years have hampered our ability to in the market, and it's hurt Barcelona sportingly. And yes, it is possible that the club could be dissolved as a punishment. I think that's entirely unlikely. I'm almost to the point where I'd say it's never going to happen for two reasons. One is, in the statute, that type of punishment is permitted only if necessary to prevent ongoing violations of the law. So that's, I don't think that's at issue here, right? I mean, it's a little bit troubling that Laporta is president again. And even though he's only not charged because the law, his first term ended in July of 2010, And this law came into effect in December of 2020.
Yeah.
So he can't be charged because he was out of that position 6 months before. But we all know he made the payments too, like, or the club made these payments while he was president too. So in a sense, someone could make an argument and say, well, they still got the same guy in charge to who made these corrupt payments, you know, in the early part of the you know, last decade. But I don't think you can really make a case that the club has to be dissolved to prevent, you know, further violations of the statute. That just doesn't make any
sense. Yeah, I think with the payments stopping in 2018 in the fashion that they did, right, that means that this is basically has been over for 5 years again, which 5 years also looking at the statutes of the Liga, the 3 years and things like that. Like, yeah, like time-wise, that's important.
Right. There's not an ongoing corrupt scheme.
Which is very different. And this is like, I want to bring up the Juve stuff just for a second. In 2006, and what is it? What was the scandal called? Capolicio or what?
On Juventus. Yeah.
With Juve. And I mean, it wasn't just Juve. It was Fiorentina. Like, there were other clubs involved and implicated. And I mean, that was, I mean, again, to compare these are, this is not a Barcelona case, but I'm saying, like, that was something much deeper and much more blatant and much easier to prove, even. Like, the evidence there was, people are going to write whole books on this. Well, I'm hoping for this two one-hour podcasts get us done by however long this takes. But again, however long this takes is also, as I wrap this up about this topic here, it's important because this is, I mean, prior to this being a whole big trial and a whole big song and dance, which might not take place for 6 months, a year, 8 months, however long it takes, the next action will likely be a hearing with witnesses and accused parties testifying. And at that point, if the magistrate does feel like a trial is needed in this case, that would come next. And there is a possibility that when the evidence is presented and the depositions take place, and again, like, the witnesses and the accused parties all testify, that there is not even enough to bring this to trial. Like, that is a possibility. Now, of course, I've heard many times that Spanish courts, it's a little bit of a show, a little bit of a song and dance. So certainly bringing one of your most famous, like, and that's a question too about Spain, like the Spanish court, like, are they going to feel comfortable bringing one of their biggest, I'd say entertainment exports, right? Like, representations of their country to court in this way, like without full evidence of a conviction at the end of it. Like, that would be the other part of that too.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is my second reason why I don't think dissolution is on the table is because a court in Barcelona is just not going to dissolve Football Club de Barcelona. It's just not going to happen, right? It's just shooting yourself in the foot. It's just that kind of thing is not going to happen. But one thing I should point out about Spanish courts. So in the US, we have a different system than Spain, where the parties conduct depositions between each other. So if I'm representing one party in the case and I need to take a bunch of depositions of the other party, then I can do that through the discovery process, and I can subpoena them, and I can subpoena third parties for documents or whatever, or for depositions. It doesn't work like that in Spain. It's called the civil law system compared to our adversarial system. And there, the judge conducts the depositions. So the judge is an investigative judge. And he can call people to court and give and take depositions. He can say, produce these documents. It's more driven by the judge than it's driven by the parties. The parties can ask the judge to provide certain things or require certain things, but it's really up to the judge. And sometimes in Spain, you'll have judges that are very, very activist in this regard. And they get their, you know, they get their teeth into a case, and they almost like a prosecutor. They really are the investigative arm of the court. And then sometimes you get a judge who's like, I don't really like this case, or I don't really want this to happen. You know, so a lot of it depends on the judge, the specific judge that's involved. So we'll see, you know, we'll just have to see how that unfolds and where it goes. And I guess the last thing I want to say, you mentioned potential punishment from UEFA and FIFA. To me, that's the most concerning thing. Now, I don't think that ultimately it's in the best interest of UEFA to ban Barca for a year or two from the Champions League. But, you know, with the whole Super League thing, Barcelona is not on UEFA's list of, you know, friends right now. We're considered a problem child, really, you know, if not an enemy. And so that does concern me a little bit, because at the end of the day, all these things are political and they're about They're about money and power. So if Barcelona were, if the Spanish courts were to determine that Barca did some, you know, violated the statute or did something corrupt, and they're punished, even if that punishment is a small fine or something, UEFA could use that as an excuse to punish Barca.
Yeah. And I think
for other reasons, right? For other reasons.
I think that it's what makes it feel completely political, because this should be taking place only in Spain. Like, it feels like this is, if it is corruption, it is Spanish corruption that does not extend to UEFA. Like, so it's like as if that Barcelona's corruption is not under the jurisdiction of UEFA. It was that they're punishing this club for being bad for something that, you know, it's like when a kid acts up at daycare and then their parents pick them up, and then the daycare teacher was like, hey, we put them in timeout for 5 hours because they pushed another kid. And then they get home and you put them in timeout too, because even though they already paid the crime at daycare, you've like just need to hammer home the point that like you've done something wrong to for example, the problem child. So, okay.
Yeah, it does seem like even in a worst case scenario, that whatever happened here was limited to domestic competitions, that there wasn't, obviously Negreira doesn't have any power with regard to European matches. So I agree with you on that point. But again, it may have nothing to do with what's precisely right. If UEFA sees a chance to drop the hammer on Barcelona and they want to do that to keep Barcelona in line or for whatever reason, or punish us for dabbling with the Super League and not letting it go or whatever, I could see that potentially happening. But again, we're talking way down the road, and hopefully it never comes to any of that.
Yep. And then by that time, I would also hope too that the club is in a better financial standing. Because again, like the fine that you'd think about now, as opposed to even 5 years or 2 years, 3 years, whatever down the road when that final ruling comes down, Barcelona at this moment, of course, are going to have a much harder time commanding and dealing with a fine than I'm hoping. Yeah, this is optimistic that they're able to financially deal with in 2 or 3 years time.
Honestly, I doubt the fine would be so material that it would matter nearly as much as like missing a year of the Champions League.
That's true too. Yeah, just based on revenue. Yeah. Or even how much revenue Barca is losing by renovating their stadium and being in Montjuic next year. Like the amount of money that they're losing for that. Yeah, it's one of the players who will be at Montjuic, so good transition here to the final two things that we have to talk about here. Real quick, the Gabi case, that one's actually like right on the doorstep here. And, you know, you and I, Mike, have talked about this before. As frustrating as it be that the court official had overturned the first team administration of Gabi because of a missed deadline. So La Liga, I believe the last time I heard, is allowing Gabi to keep the six and keeping the registration, but the contract is going back to a youth contract, which again, the frustration of that is that next week I'm going to have something coming out about Busquets. I always do this, replacement, you know, I use the air quotes or whatever, but you know, I'm going to have some on that, and we can try to talk about transfer stuff, you know, who can Barca afford, whatever. But it always comes back to this kind of story where I go, okay, even though Gabi's going to be a free agent, he's not going anywhere. You know, he's not going to have his head turned. He will sign that contract that they have already agreed upon with the agent. Like, there's no reason for him to rip up that contract because Barcelona failed to register him in this way, right? He's going to stay at Barcelona with the contract that they already signed on that renewal. Same thing with Araujo. Araujo has already signed the deal. They have to register that deal. Balde, it seems like that renewal will get done. And Dembele, it's maybe in the early stages, but it seems like both parties are very optimistic for that to be done as well. So, but when it comes to registering those four renewals, that's my concern, that it was so difficult for Barcelona and they failed to be able to register those players in January, that to think that Barcelona is going to be able to have the not only the revenue, but just the difference in the limit that they're able to not only get all these done, but also to sign additional players while taking others off the wages. I don't want to have a whole discussion about transfers and stuff in and out, but just through the lens of Gabi, that's really what concerns me the most. Like, whether or not he were 6 or 30, whether or not he's playing on a youth contract or on a first team contract at this moment does not matter at all. Because again, he will sign that deal, that renewal over the summer. He will be the 6 for the future for Barcelona. But the big, more worrisome thing is the difficulties it takes for Barcelona to even get this over the line in January, or their failure to get it over the line in January. That is concerning.
Yeah, I agree. It's mostly an administrative annoyance, I think. But I think Kulis can remain calm about this one, because like you said, I don't think, even if Gavi is deemed to be a free agent this summer, he's not going anywhere. So I'm not too worried about that. It is just that one more thing, like, just one more thing we need to sort of disentangle and figure out a way to do without violating the salary limit, you know, which is annoying. I mean, we want to get back to a place where, you know, we can just do these routine deals without having to worry about, you know, this financial gymnastics. But again, this is like, people need to keep in mind, this is not like Barca's broke and they can't do it. It's, we have to work within this system and these limitations that are imposed upon us. It's not limitations that are financial. It's limitations that are regulatory. And I think people don't understand that sometimes. Barcelona has money and we have access to credit. So Barca has really, really good liquidity right now. Maybe not as much as Man City, you know, but it's not as bad as many people think. Like, we're in a financial crisis. I think we're mostly through the financial crisis, and maybe it'll take another year or two when Busquets is off the books and Alba's off the books. And, you know, some of the big fees that we paid during the Bartomeu era are off the books.
Yeah. I mean, even the point of Busquets, like, he makes 37 million euros this year. And even if he renews, I know that people look at it always from a sporting degree. And I'll talk about this next week with him, but if he renews for 3 to 4 million, so imagine that, right? Imagine your frustration with Busquets, the 37 million euro player. Fair. But then if you view him as a 3 to 4 million player and he's basically the same player this year, next year, you know, you understand why that deal is not, say, favorable for Barcelona, because, of course, you would love to be able to replace him for a younger model. But in the same regard, it's like, if you view him as a 3.5 million player as opposed to a 37 million player, now imagine what else you can do in that wage structure.
Exactly. And even that alone, you know, I would imagine could help us sort of fix these Gavi and Araujo and Balde registration problems and get those contracts registered. But anyway, again, it's just, it's annoying because it's just one more thing we have to deal with. Like, we thought that one was sort of off and in dusted, you know, and now, okay, well, that comes back. Now we have to deal with that before we deal with Araujo, before we deal with Balde. But I don't know. These things don't, this seems like a very minor thing compared to the Negreira case, frankly. I think this one's going to be fine. I don't think we're losing Gavi or risking losing him in any way, shape or form.
Okay, well, speaking of Gavi and Araujo, though, last thing, I guess I want to say real quick, like, usually at Clasico, we could have these huge things. I usually do, like, a YouTube preview and all that, but because they're playing three times in a month, and because they won 1-0, I think, like, that was such a discussion point about the possession and all that stuff, but I think this version of El Clasico might be very much, not say what you're more used to, but with the exception of when Pedri will play, you know, they said that his minutes will likely be limited. How limited? Will he start? Will he just play in the second half, or will he start and come off depending on the result? Again, worst case scenario is Barcelona lose this match and then they have 12 matches to be up 6 points. Mm-hmm. They have 12 matches to basically, you know, we'll say lose two games and all that, which is still a lot of work to do in the league, of course. But again, having your players back, we'll say, you know, especially with Dembele also to return on the horizon, things are a bit more optimistic with this El Clasico than it even was for that Copa del Rey first leg. Or even Athletic Club, right? And as I said on the earlier show this week, the fact that Barcelona survived the Athletic Club and survived the 1-0, the Copa del Rey at the Santiago Bernabeu, it just, like, it gives you a lot of hope. But of course, football, as you know, Mike, that's the thing where the minute you have hope, the minute Barcelona makes you feel a little happy, well, if you're able to ignore the Negreira case, as long as, like, the minute Barcelona gives you a little bit of hope on the field, of course, that's when they dash your hopes. But yeah, like, things going into this El Clasico are generally, to me, I think even tactically, pretty straightforward, depending on the Pedri minutes.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the lineup picks itself, with the exception of, like you said, do you start Pedri, or do you want him there at the end of the game and start Kessié instead, and then go from there, you know, with Pedri to close out the game? I think that's really the only question, right? I mean, I think we'll see the Busquets, De Jong, Gavi, and either Pedri or Kessié in the midfield. Hopefully Balde, Koundé, Christensen, Araujo are on the back. I expect Araujo to play right back, as he usually does, to contain Vinny.
Yeah, remember, he was suspended, not hurt, so he should be fine.
Right, and then Lewandowski and Rafinha up front, I would think. And Gavi sort of playing that modified wing role. I mean, that's what I would expect. I was really pessimistic going into the Copa semi-first leg. I think most people were, with all the injuries and who we were missing. And they pulled that out, and I think they pulled it out because deep down, it's just more important to Barca than to Real Madrid this year, right? I mean, and I think it's the same with the league. in some way, I think Real Madrid kind of has given up on the league, not maybe not consciously, but, you know, they play Liverpool today. They're going to finish that off. That's the other advantage we have, is we have the week off and they're going to come off, you know, a Champions League game that they're playing today. And I just think we should be a little hungrier to put the league away. A win puts it away, basically, right? It's mm-hmm. no Liga if we win
9 points. Today. Yeah, that's It'll 9 points. 12, you know, yeah.
Yeah, 12 if we win.
Or 12, yeah.
So I think that gives, and it's at home as well. So I think we have all the sort of intangibles in this matchup this weekend. Hopefully Lewandowski wakes up from his recent sort of slumber and we win 2-1. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, Barca doesn't have any draws this year. Like, just that's still 9 points with a 1-1 draw or 0-0 draw. So a draw even benefits Barcelona. So usually I feel like, Mike, is a case where Barcelona, if they draw or lose, they've lost. And if they, you know, they have to win. But this is one of those rare cases, I think, that if Barcelona win or draw, then they won the game, basically.
I agree. A draw would be fine. Even at 9-point lead with the Clásicos behind us, I think it's pretty much locked and loaded.
Mathematically, yeah. They just have to not get distracted by the things happening off the field. But as was mentioned by Emil earlier in the week as well, with the Noguera case and all that noise and everything like that, again, that stopped in 2018. So these players were not around for it. Like, they don't listen to that stuff. They don't worry about that stuff. So they're focused on El Clasico, as is Xavi, and things like that. So, Mike, thankfully, I think, not say we're going to push the Noguera case into the future, but I think that hurricane and that storm, you know, I think we'll quiet down in the next week or two. Like, how much evidence and how much things will continue to leak out, who knows, right? It seems like we continue. By the time this is out, there might be two or three more surprises, unfortunately, if it takes me 24 hours to get this out. So we don't know the twists and turns that are coming, but I think you will start to see this quiet down a little bit as basically the prosecutor's office, again, they bring in testimony and the judge, you know, makes it. Speaking of that, I did all my homework and you still got me. I still learned something today, which is great. So did all my homework, but I learned something about the Spanish court system. But Mike, that's why I had you on. I really appreciate that. So thanks so much for the time.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Dan.
Yep. And if you enjoyed, I don't know how you could have, but if you did enjoy this content, not only can you follow him down in the show notes below, but we're on Twitter and Instagram, TikTok at the Barcelona Pod, close Facebook group, Patreon, as well as YouTube and all that other stuff. So as a programming note, this is the last time I will be speaking to another person on the podcast for a little over a week. I'm going away for next week, but I'm hard at work preparing all the content for next week. So there still will actually be the first podcast of the week will be the El Clasico review as the five headlines. So I'll have a little preamble there as well. So a little extra for the podcast listeners, as well as the five headlines. And then I have two different things planned for next week as little mini podcasts, like just little 10-15 minute in your ears. So that will be available midweek or whenever it is, Wednesday, Friday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever it may be. So there's three different things to look out for next week. But again, it's the last time I'll be speaking to a person for at least a week and a half now, because again, I'm going away for the week. International break, perfect time, worked out, had nothing to do with the international break. But either way, I hope to talk to everybody soon. So you'll be hearing from me again, but for all my guests, we'll have to wait on them for another minute. But this was, again, something you enjoyed. Make sure you share it. Let everybody know. And if this was the best and most comprehensive version of the Noguera case discussion that you heard, I do implore you, just share this to even non-Barca fans. So like, hey, what's happening? Why are Barcelona so corrupt? Like I said earlier in the week, I have a friend who doesn't know anything about the sport texting me like, hey, why are Barcelona coming up on my ESPN alerts? And I have to tell him, okay, I'm going to have a podcast that's going to be really confusing. You won't understand at all, but listen to that. So if you did enjoy this and this is helpful for somebody, please share it. That'd be help. But again, thanks so much for listening to the show. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barca.